Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
This week on the PR Moment podcast, we're taking another change of tack. We're talking about the pitching process. And on the show, we've got a PR buyer, so to speak, and a PR seller. On the buy side, welcome to the show, Lenovo's Executive Director of Global Corporate Communications, Charlotte West. And on the sell side, we've got 3Monkey Zeno's Business Development Director, Rebecca Wagstaff. Some big news on the PR Moment Awards front before we start. Because of the general election, we've moved the deadline, and this is relevant to you, I should imagine, Rebecca, from Friday the 13th to Monday the 16th of December. All the categories, judges and entry forms are on the awards microsite, prmomentawards.com. And if you are interested in best practice of PR and measurement and evaluation, please also do take a look at our PR Analytics programme with speakers from Facebook, Diageo, the UK Government Communications Service and many more. Details of that event are on the homepage of prmoment.com. And finally, thanks so much as ever to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Welcome to the show, Rebecca and Charlotte.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Now, can we get this one out of the way first? What is a tissue meeting?
I had to look it up.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, do you know what? It's ridiculous, isn't it? Because it's a phrase that we've used so much. And mm-hmm. I thought, I'm sure we've borrowed it from the advertising industry, which we have.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Borrow good and bad stuff from them, of course. But I didn't really know the proper origin. And yeah. it's really from a time pre-computers, pre-digital anything, where creatives would kind of sketch the ideas essentially on tissue paper, right. You know, kind of almost graph paper, we would probably call it. And bring it to the client, and it would be a kind of a working session to really evaluate a creative idea, hence the stupid phrase tissue yeah. session. It's ridiculous.
I think agencies use a tissue meeting to try and sort of pressure test their thinking, so to get a steer from the client as to whether they're headed in the right direction. Now, the interesting thing about tissue meetings is, you know, should you do them, should you not? Yeah. Because quite often when you get to the tissue meeting stage, you're quite far down your thinking. So mm-hmm. if you sort of reveal your strategy or the development of your ideas, and then the client is pulling the worst face you've ever seen, yeah. the problem is then, eek, got to go back to the drawing board.
Well, although I guess it's better to know then than
well, not necessarily, because yeah. sometimes okay. When you develop the idea, and in the presentation, ideas are sold in a very different way, sometimes actually that will capture imagination more. So I think for agencies, it's sometimes it's one of the trickier meetings in the pitch process, yeah. I would say.
Okay. I think they have their value
yes.
when you're working with an agency, when you're you're working in an iterative way on projects. But in a pitch scenario, I think they can be dangerous because sometimes the client doesn't know what the client wants.
Okay.
Sometimes yeah. you need actually to be pushed and prodded and provoked. And that's much harder to do in a tissue session, which is more like a working discussion than it is in that high energy, adrenaline filled pitch moment where actually you're looking for something that makes you kind of just sit back and go, oh my God, we need that. So it might feel super uncomfortable, but we need it.
Yeah.
So Charlotte, Lenovo's pitch process yeah. is pretty well formalised, isn't it? You know, it's not something you've rushed and put together. Do you include tissue sessions on that?
We didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't.
And Rebecca, on the tissue, on the, you know.
Yeah, the pictures that we do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to give yeah. you a caveat. I haven't yeah. asked you about to prepare this stat.
That's
so
right.
in broad brush terms, how often is a tissue session part of the pitch process?
About a third.
Okay, so
about
it's not that.
A third. It's not yeah, that okay. many, no. Sometimes we will request one because actually we would want our mm. ideas or our thinking ratified, particularly if we felt that we were really challenging the brief, that we didn't... you know, we had some considerations about the content of the brief that we really wanted to make sure that we got a steer from the client on.
Okay.
They do have a place in the process, but it's all about, you know, the presentation in the room for that 90 minutes and making sure that you land the idea there and then with the client.
Okay. Now, when you've done the pitch, and we'll come on to the more detailed bits and pieces in a moment or two, but when you've walked out the pitch, how reliable is that sort of feeling that you have of we absolutely nailed that one, or conversely, no chance?
Unfortunately, not at all. It is not at all reliable.
All right.
And I've had scores and scores of situations where, you know, the team has come out immediately on the phone with absolutely cracked it. Chemistry brilliant. It could not have gone better. We're all, you know, heading down the pub for a celebration drink, smashing. you know, the ripple across the agency, whoop, whoop. And then, you know, the feedback comes through and sadly doesn't quite align with that. And similarly with exactly the reverse, you know, really, really dry atmosphere. Couldn't get eye contact. Didn't seem keen on the ideas. And then the most effusive feedback coming back. So it's a really, really difficult one to read. And I just think it's, going back to what Charlotte was saying earlier, it's quite often clients, they don't know what they want until they see it. And sometimes they're actually, quite often there's like a scorecard, there's an evaluation scorecard involved. So therefore they're not, you know, incredibly engaged in eye contact because they're busy filling in their scorecard. Okay. So sadly, I would love for every time we come out for it all to be the way that we think it had gone, but it's not.
Yeah. And I echo that because I was agency side for a long time and exactly the same experience where you really feel, you know, like really buzzing.
Yes.
And you then get the phone call before you've barely walked out the door to say thank you, but no thank you. And it's...
But
I think it depends where you sometimes come in from a timing point of view in the pitch process. So if you're if you're the first one, you know, and they've seen nothing else, then there's that, oh, wow, this is amazing. And then they see something next night, oh, that's a bit more amazing. So I think it can be a bit...
It's like and by the end, they've seen five presentations. Yeah, they don't want to see another one.
Exactly.
Well, you only know how well your presentation's gone, don't you? You don't know anyone else.
Completely.
From both of your perspectives, procurement is clearly something we need just to talk about in this new business pitch scenario and the role of it. Where do you see it from? Charlotte, should we start from your perspective? Is it are they a useful? Well, presumably you're going to say they are a useful element to the process, but to what extent are they involved?
Yeah, so they're a necessary element to the process. I think that is the starting point from a corporate point of view. And when I was agency side, you know, they were the devil, obviously, because nobody ever wanted to deal with procurement from a new client. But I think that you have to embrace that they are part of the process. Mm-hmm. And you have to treat them as an equal stakeholder. And I think for me, that is the most important lesson I learned when we went through a big global pitch, is that bring them in at the beginning, make them feel as equal in the voice that they have as everybody else who's a PR expert, and have them sit in the pitches with you. And we did that. And I know one of the pieces of feedback I got from our procurement team after that was that they'd never really been invited to the table like that before. So it made it much easier for us to be able to say to them, okay, we've got this scorecard, and this is the score for, you know, and this is the ranking of the three agencies we've got and we've seen. But then you can start saying, but did you see how that agency pitched differently to that one and how that chemistry worked because of all of the people in the room and the dynamics? If they're not in the room with you, they're not going to take any of that subjective feedback because they weren't there to see it. Whereas they can start to see how, okay, they need to look at both this kind of scorecard and the sort of procurement lens, through the procurement lens, but also through the emotional gut feel lens, which is much more of a PR thing.
And I mean, what are the dynamics of the decision? Where it says, these people are really good.
Yeah.
These people are really creative. We've worked with these guys before, but by the way, these guys are much cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what? How does that?
Yeah. So we typically do, and most companies will do this. They'll do a weighting. So, you know, we will agree with procurement beforehand that actually we think the cost bit should only be weighted X% within the whole decision making process. Because actually we think, you know, strategic thinking, creative delivery, whatever we decide, is more critical overall to the decision. But the numbers bit has to be in there, otherwise, you know, procurement wouldn't sign off on it.
Okay. But it tends not to come down to a chat around the table at the end. There's some pretty involved ratios and weightings that are going on with this on the scorecard that's going on through the process.
Yeah, so we had a scorecard and I printed it off actually because I couldn't even remember what the things that we measured against when it came to the actual pitch process. Mm-hmm. So we looked in a very broad category of overall fit and team dynamics, and that was the one that was the most critical thing for me in the process personally.
But for you, not everybody else as well. But okay.
Yep. So this was a scorecard that everybody that was involved in the pitch process had to fill in. So that was the first measure.
Right.
And, you know, that was really about thinking, you know, on our best day and our worst day, will these people have our back? Can I pick up the phone to, you know, somebody in that agency team at 11 o'clock at night and say, you know, we've got a problem, we need your help, and will they be there for us? So that, that team fit and dynamics bit is so important and so critical. The second bit was strategic thinking. The third bit, which I think we'll probably come into in a minute, was diverse team. And then the last bit was really what we called business terms, which was really the kind of procurement piece.
Okay. But that was not overly complicated, actually.
No, not overly complicated at all. And yeah, you could argue they're all quite subjective areas, and everybody will interpret them differently. But it was interesting when we went through the process, the sort of commonality that you've seen between the way people think, and actually often there's the same reactions coming up around the table to how people received what an agency was doing and presenting.
So just from your side, do you, going back to the procurement element, at the end of it all, were you all sort of, okay, these guys are the right people for us, or was there a diversity of views?
We were, pretty much. Okay. It was a couple of outliers, but they weren't, you know, ultimately there has to be somebody that makes the final decision and say, based on all of the feedback that we've taken in, this is the route that we're going. And that's really where procurement comes in at that end process, where they negotiate the business terms. Okay. And really what they do is they look at, you know, unfortunately, rate card, and, you know, the rates that we're paying now for the particular agency that we were, or multiple agencies that we were using, the proposed rate card, you know, looking at discounted rates, looking at where we might use them elsewhere in the company and other markets, and coming up with a proposal. But we try, like the PR people and the client-side agency team tend to leave finance in the agency and procurement in the client to deal with that, because it gets, I think it sort of, you know, we don't like talking about money, PR people.
Well, you've got to have a relationship with them on both sides.
Yes.
I'm just interested, have you ever been through a pitch process where the so-and-so agency is the right one to work with. Procurement goes off and does its thing, and then they come back and say, we couldn't agree a rate.
I haven't, and I probably wouldn't work for a company where procurement had that much power in the decision-making process.
Okay.
Because it's up to us as the experts to be able to influence procurement into, okay, maybe, you know, the hourly rate for an account director is 20% more at this agency than this agency. But actually, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter because of A, B, C.
So it's interesting from the agency's bargaining perspective. Yeah.
But I think also to mirror that, I can't remember of the hundreds of pitches I've been involved in, I can't remember one where we haven't won because procurement said we were too expensive, ultimately. I still think, although, when we get a pitch process and there is a larger involvement of procurement, that's, you can sometimes add 30-40% more work involved, because there is sometimes there's portals that you've got to fill in, and the level of detail you have to submit can be really tiresome when you're trying to also develop a creative response. But actually, the useful thing is like the standardisation, you know, that all agencies are doing it. This feels like a bit more of a level playing field. And actually, I think we've all just sort of, we've come to terms with the role that procurement plays. No, exactly. No. And I think a few years ago, there was a bit of a sort of, furore about, are the procurement teams taken over, but actually
it's all grown up a bit.
It is okay. And I think so long as you and any agency worth their salt will have a lot of this information down pat that procurement require, and so it's just a case of tailoring it to that opportunity. And actually, if you're a decent agency, you can get that done.
Just a final thought on the procurement question before we should move on, but you presumably, from your side, try and engage with and involve procurement throughout the process as well.
Yeah, and sometimes they're actually really helpful.
Okay.
Sometimes if we're using some unwieldy, piece of software, it's brilliant to have somebody from procurement you can basically just, sense check stuff with to make sure that what you're supplying. So it's not all bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's such a truism, isn't it? In all sectors, frankly, not just public relations, that people buy from people. But most of the time, it seems to me, you tend to be pitching at people you've never met.
Mm-hmm, true.
Not always the case, obviously.
Yep. Yeah.
But so it doesn't quite follow, does it?
Well, it does really, because I suppose in a pitch process, even if you're pitching to people you don't know, it's about building of that relationship. Yeah. It's the start of the process where you build
over,
a relationship.
Over a sort of an hour.
Because things that happen
process,
before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so a pitch process will tend to be between, let's say, 2 and 3 weeks. Yeah, exactly. And so,
but you'll have fairly limited interaction between.
Well, that's the job of the agency mm-hmm. to find as many of those pockets as okay. you can. Two, that's your opportunity to influence, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And one of the one of the things that we really try and do is win the pitch before the pitch. You know, yeah. so if they don't know much about you, they've been recommended by a friend, colleague, whatever. It's about that's your time to shine. It's not only about the 90 minutes in the room
no.
with the deck up, you know, death by PowerPoint anyway. It's about how you build the relationship and, you know, humanize the experience about pitch processing. And so that's how you sort of get ahead yeah. into before the actual pitch process is before the pitch presentation is done.
Yeah, and there's some companies that will say, not us, but some companies that will say, you know, you're only allowed to engage with us in these, you know, three yeah. formal moments. Okay. Every agency has yeah. to have its equal share of time, all of those kind of things.
I was agency side, I don't know if that was just having its sort of moment, but that was yeah. very much the case.
Yeah, and that's not the right way to do it, because you're yeah. not going to, as Rebecca said, mm-hmm. you're not going to get that feeling of, these are the people I want to work with and spend, you know, a ton of time with, working on things, both easy things and hard things.
Okay.
So, and I think there's other ways that you get to know people as well. And PR is a relatively small industry. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people interconnected. So, you know, my first port of call when I'm looking at an agency team when we went through this pitch process is, okay, who are the people we're going to meet at the agency side? Who do I know that knows them? Who, you know, do I know somebody that used to work with them, that used to be their account manager in a different agency? And you try and build the picture
right.
without necessarily being on the phone or out drinking with them or having lunch or whatever, but you can build a picture. And I'm always a bit surprised in pitch process we did that, and this isn't Zeno, it was a different agency, where they didn't do their due diligence on who we were as people. And there was a really strong connection with one agency where I knew the person that was leading the pitch, I knew their best friend. And I knew that because I'd worked that out, but they hadn't worked that out. And I thought, if you knew that, you would have had a totally different picture of me than perhaps the one that you, and that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But I don't mean it like that. But you would have had a very different picture of me to the one that you had walking into that pitch. And you would have had an advantage, significant advantage, over, you know, the other agencies because of that. Right. So it's always a bit surprising, I think, that people don't make those connections outside of those moments.
No, I always think it's a surprising fact, frankly, that, and probably one that outsiders looking into the sector would not realise, that you both reckon about 30% of what gets pitched gets activated,
mm-hmm.
which is, I know that is the case, but it's really surprising, isn't it? Really, it's just. It's not a great look for radio, but I'm scratching my head here. It's a monumental waste of frankly both people's time, then. It's a 70% waste of everybody's time. Is that right?
Well, I don't agree that it is a waste of time, because the point of a pitch process is not the specific ideas that are come up with that are presented at that moment in time when you're all in a room together. It's about how an agency shows their thinking, their structure, the way they've approached a challenge, and how they've brought something to life, maybe made it campaignable, whatever it happens to be, whatever the ask is.
So it's a test.
It's a test, essentially. Yeah. But I mean, I was thinking it's probably no different to like when you have an extension at home. You say, you get the builder in, you've gone to three or four builders, then you get the one that you like, and then he comes in or she comes in and you say, oh, actually, I don't, maybe only knock half of that wall down because we're going to do something else. And you change the thing at the end, but what you're buying is the fact that you know, in the case of builder, you know and trust them and think they do a good job, and you like working with them. And it's the same with an agency. It's that part for me.
As the agencies know that, right? I mean, when you're pitching, you're not thinking, oh, we're gonna do all this stuff.
I'll tell you what, you can only ever pitch ideas that you know you could activate.
Yes.
There is absolutely nowhere as an agency you can go, right, okay, we're going to do X, Y, Z, and it's going to be out of the ballpark, because you have to have a costed, viable, strategically correct, creatively brilliant document. And so we do go in with a proposal that we think answers the brief and also is going to shift behaviour drive reputation and answer the brief. So we do that.
Because it's about the idea and the price of that idea in a sense.
Completely. Because, okay. Yeah. But also in terms of like the waste of the time bit, I think what's interesting for consultancy and agency and the people in it, new business is like fabulous to work on. It's like super exciting. Yeah. And it's...
it is if you win it.
No, the process is great. It's you learn about a new sector, you deep dive into a new brand. Yeah. Exactly. And also, in addition to all that sort of new knowledge that you pick up, there's nothing better than the camaraderie and the team building when you're working on a pitch. For that reason alone, new business is like one of the most exciting parts of working in an agency consultancy.
But from a business agency owner's perspective, it's also a costly part, isn't it? Because it takes up a lot of time and you ain't getting paid for it.
It absolutely is. But, it's grow or die, so it absolutely is. And I think to go back to build on what Charlotte was saying, the what you present, it's the art of the possible. Mm-hmm. This is where we can take your brand. Something that at Three Monkeys, we're as ambitious for their brand as they are, and I think that sort of alignment is when, that's when it becomes the hairs stand up on the back of your neck it's not all bad.
Yeah, and we were at great pains throughout our pitch process to say to the people that were involved, this isn't about whether you like the idea or not, or whether you think it's going to work or not. That doesn't matter. What you've got to evaluate is, do you think it's achievable? Do you think they've approached it right? Do you think the insight and data they've used to come up with the idea in the first place is insightful, and they've taken that and, used that to work in the way that they think and approach the idea and the challenge and the opportunity? So, it's very easy to be sucked in, and I think this is probably kind of a historical view of PR, of being sucked in by the big ideas. And it's not always about the big ideas. What we're really evaluating, or the intention is to evaluate in a pitch process, is this agency's thinking the kind of thinking I want to bring to, my company, my brand?
Okay.
Rather than I like that idea or I don't like that idea.
And when you hear from agencies, are there big differences in the type of ideas and activations that they come to you with? Is it, or are they tend to be broadly along the same?
There is. I think it's always really surprising how the same brief can be interpreted so differently by different agencies.
Which is great, actually, isn't it?
It is, because actually, if it was all the same, then it would be really tough to make the decision. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, inevitably, we're human, so we are a little bit swayed by the idea, no matter what I just said a moment ago. but it's always presented, technically in a totally different way. It's presented by people in a different way. It's showcased in the room in a different way. So I think it's every element of a pitch that's done differently by different agencies.
Okay. And with the caveat that clearly from this discussion we're not saying that the pitch process is broken, far from it, but is there a better way that we can think of to start a business relationship between two firms?
It's interesting you had this question, because Charlotte and I were discussing at the start, and we said, what about this question? And we both agreed that actually we don't really
think
there
one.
Is. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Three Monkeys have a really healthy new business pipeline. We pitch a lot. And one of the, we're often thinking, is there a different way?
So you've never won a piece of, other than organic from a current client, it's always been via pitch. There's never, no one's ever done a different way of okay, let's see how everything works.
There are sort of machinations on a theme. Yeah, so we do, whole day workshops where you get given the brief at the start of the morning and by 5 o'clock you have to present. We get given a half and half where, you involve the client in the prospect in the thinking, and then you go away and you write the deck. Mm. So there are all the standard way, which is that you're issued a brief and then you've got 2 weeks to do it. So there are different variations on a theme.
Yeah.
But actually, it does work well. I think the big caveat is, so long as you feel that you've got enough access, if you've got enough information, that there is parity and equality in the relationship, that the company is as willing to make it a good process as the agency is, that's when it is the best process, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the only other idea I could come up with is to sort of mimic real life and stick us all in an escape room together and see the best and worst of people in that environment, because that's sort of more real probably sometimes than a pitch scenario.
Go off on a company away date.
Yeah, see who you really like and who sinks the raft as you're trying to cross the river. But anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm just thinking as we sit here, and I'm not saying this is particularly better or not, but, you know, could the brief be issued at 9 o'clock in the morning? And then the agencies get 3 hours, and then you meet up at lunchtime.
It's not real world though, because most of the time you've got client side, you've got time to plan. So actually, what you want an agency to do, it's not about, yes, okay, sometimes it's about thinking on your feet and thinking fast.
Okay.
Of course, that is an element of everybody's agency. But the reality is, you might say, we're launching this product in 3 months' time.
Right.
Here's what this product does.
So you don't
know, here's the challenge. So actually, you don't need to force it from a time point of view and say, put everybody under super artificial pressure, because actually what you'll get is probably the really superficial wow ideas that haven't been thought through properly. And what you want is that thinking.
Exactly. And there is something about the percolation of thinking that if you just let it settle, and that's what time does give you. And then there is enough. Then there is enough sort of challenge and pressure testing along the way, so you actually end up with something that really is a gem that started off in a sort of rough idea that at the end, through the percolation process, you are able to really get it into something special.
Okay. Now, Charlotte, just talk us through how Lenovo runs its request for proposal RFP process, because I know that you guys have done some really interesting work on choosing or potentially choosing agencies that have good diversity, if that's the right phrase.
It is the right phrase. So I think we did it in probably a fairly traditional way, in that we did a request for information, first of all, where we, you know, and I think people underestimate how important that part of the process is, because it's seen as a bit of housekeeping, where you're looking at things like, you know, competitive clients, all those kind of things. But actually, we interrogated right at that beginning process around the agency structure and the diversity piece as well, because we wanted to see the diversity numbers for the agencies that we were working with.
I don't want to go drill too much into detail on that, but you are saying, right, you have X number of white people working for you, you have X number of black people, X number of Asian people, Hispanic, whatever.
And gender as well, because you know, in particularly in the PR industry, it can be flipped the wrong way and be too skewed to women than to men. And age diversity as well. We shouldn't underestimate that.
So
we wanted the full picture.
And were agencies happy to give you that?
They were. And we said, you know, don't give us, you know, we're not asking, like, you know, do you to cut it by every office. We want a broad picture of you as an agency and how, you know, how diverse you are. Some had more detail
globally
than others.
You mean so
globally? Yeah, so we were looking for an agency that had a global footprint. That doesn't mean an office in every country, because we weren't asking them to execute in the ground, but global thinking. So first of all, it was like, okay, what does your agency makeup look like? And then, okay, when it got to the second stage of RFP, okay, this is the account team you're putting forward. They have to be diverse as well. They have to reflect who we are as a client and who our customers are as a company.
Okay.
And that was really, really important. And we actually measure that on an ongoing basis. So we look at it in our review process with Zeno as well and say, okay, let's just check. Because, you know, people move around on account teams all the time. You know, there's churn and you bring new people in to work on something. And actually, so we're always not, I mean, it sounds
the
like
agency,
fanatical, but we're not. But you know, we're checking to say, okay, are we still on this? Okay.
Right. But in that sense, the agency gave its diversity numbers broadly.
Yep.
But then if an all-white account team turned up, you at least could say, hang on a minute, guys, this isn't what we wanted.
Exactly, right. And there were some all-white account teams.
Right.
Or some tokenism as well, which was fairly obvious.
Well, I should add at this point, there was a really interesting podcast we did with Troy Neptune a couple of months back. We'll put that in, because he talks at length about that process.
He does,
so we should, and you guys have sort of led the way on that, frankly. But just talk us through a little bit more about that RFP process, because it's one of those, if I'm honest, it's always been a slightly grey area to me. I'm happy to say I've never looked in detail at these forms, probably because I find the concept of it just too painful. But go on, Rebecca, you must spend a reasonable amount of your working life filling out these things. How arduous are they? Are they as bad as everyone suggests, or have you got it sorted?
Well, we have it sorted, but that's not to say that every agency have it sorted. Well, I think there's two stages, and I think possibly you're referring to the RFI stage rather than the RFP stage.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier, which, you know, any agency worth their salt will have a bank of collaterals and materials which, you know, bring to life succinctly and pithily your proposition. It doesn't have marketing jargon, has everything a procurement wants to see, everything a comms director wants to see. You know, your methodology for developing press office ideas or creative ideas, big campaigns, how you do crisis and issues, all of these, these are the type of questions that an RFI will ask of you. And essentially, you're given a bunch of questions. It can be 20, it can be 200.
Really? How often is it 200?
I would say maybe like once a quarter, something like that.
God.
Yeah, I mean, of the 200, it can be tick box,
Sure.
You know, but you still got to tick
those
boxes.
But it's part of the process.
Yeah,
but they're similar enough so that you can.
They are.
Once you've done one, you've done 50% of them.
Completely. Although this is an absolute truism, they're all idiosyncratic in a slight way, so that you can't ever have
one.
Yes,
quite so easily.
Exactly, and so that's why you
wouldn't
know.
That be a great move?
Wouldn't
for
that?
Everyone just to unify?
Yes, it would save.
It'd be boring.
Would save you guys money and save you guys money.
Exactly.
Would,
I know, but we don't really want to be project managers, do we? You know, so you know that's the thing. So it is about sort of matching the message to the brief.
But actually, what the information that almost all of those forms gather is pretty much identical, isn't it?
They ask it in different ways.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, and again, I printed off what we asked for in our RFI, and it wasn't lists of questions. It was like, please tell us about this area, which is very different to asking a very yes no question or a very explicit question. So it was things like how do you handle client conflict? If you're a holding group, how are you structured and how? And this is a whole, probably another topic for another podcast. But you know, how can holding group agencies bring together best in class client teams from different pockets within the holding group, which frankly nobody's ever managed to do properly yet.
Well, they say they can.
Yeah, but they can't. Mm-hmm. They really, really can't. Mm-hmm. With the D&I bit that you mentioned, diversity and inclusion piece, we did ask for some general comments around trends people were seeing in our sector, so to get some of that early thinking, because otherwise all you're getting, with the greatest respect to Rebecca, is probably the new business person filling in the questions.
Copy and pasting.
I wish
or
it was
not.
As easy as copy and pasting.
Yeah, if only.
Creative
but
writing.
But actually, you've got to get some of that early insight. Insight and thinking in the RFI process.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just
pointless. Okay.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Rebecca, what techniques do you try and use to improve your chances of winning a pitch?
Well, I'm clearly not going to give away the secret sauce, am I? that would not help. I think there are a number of levers that you can pull to get the best, put yourself in the position of getting the best result. And I think to drive home the point about people by people. Team chemistry is phenomenally important. Team chemistry amongst your own team, so that you can you come across as a cohesive, aligned, friendly, expert bunch.
It's always that great one where the before the pitch, the agencies or team are shaking their hands and meeting each other outside the room.
That still happens. That's
really
stereotypical. Does still happen. Oh, it's terrifying.
Beautiful. Fills me with horror.
I'm sure not in Three Monkeys.
Absolutely not. No.
No, but that's a good point. So you've got team chemistry.
Yeah, and we have a formula and a way to make sure that we address that early on. And
really?
A lot of
is
around
psychometric tests and things like that.
Nothing as sophisticated as that. It's just making sure that it is it's considered.
Yeah, Ben's a bit awkward. Don't put Ben on that one. Fine.
Something along those lines, but not quite that. But exactly. And I think with the team chemistry, it's about picking up the stone, seeing what's underneath, and then matching it, just making sure that you have addressed it, that you've considered it. So team chemistry without doubt is really important. And so chemistry amongst yourself within the team that you're pitching with, and then also a fit with
on the basis that you hopefully know who you're meeting. Sometimes I guess you don't.
You would always ask who you are seeing, you know.
No, but as in you know the personalities of the people you're
meeting. Yes, exactly. And again, that's all about the interrogation of the brief and the opportunity to make sure you put yourself in a situation where you do know as much. So you do know, you know, that Charlotte's got a lab, I've got a lab, that Charlotte, you know, your best friend worked with your brother-in-law. These are all true facts.
Yeah, they are true facts,
exactly, yes.
And taking a step back from Three Monkeys, you know, my impression these days is, and bear in mind everyone's always trying to tell me things in the light of making themselves look good, that data and analytics plays a much bigger role in pitches than it used to.
Of course, yeah. We now have, you know, a fleet of tools that we can draw onto from to, you know, deep dive into the audience, brand sentiment, you know, all they are useful. And of course, you know, everyone talks now about, you know, data-driven storytelling. That's an absolute bedrock of what we do. But there is still the whole science plus art. There still needs to be a level of magical creative thinking. Yeah. And I think if you go, you know, to go back to the original question of like, how do you win a pitch? Yes, of the levers, team fit. Of course, make sure that your ideas are rooted in firm data-driven insights, and make sure that that process is robust and you can ladder it up. And through those insights, you're telling a client something new about their brand or their audience. That's what clients and prospects want to see. But there has to be, you know, a creative artistry. You have to, you know, that is your time to shine, and making sure that you are... that your agency has a process to make sure that you're matching a client's interpretation of creativity with your interpretation of creativity, and that's something that we do spend some time on, to make sure that, you know, creativity is very subjective, but we try and make it as least subjective as we can through our own the way we run our pitches.
Okay.
And I think, I mean, the data piece is a staple now. I mean, I think probably 2 years ago, even when probably we were going through our major pitch process, it was more front and centre than it is now, because it's just built in now. It's like, you know.
Baked in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think we've just moved from everybody saying in a pitch scenario, well, I think, to I know. And I think that's the subtle shift, well, not subtle, but quite big shift that we've had as an industry.
And from your side as a buyer, are there some lessons that you've learned, other than the stuff you've talked about already, that means that you are likely to get an agency that fits what you want and need?
So I think the chemistry bit is critical, as Rebecca said, and you feel that through every step of the process. And that, to me, still overrides everything in terms of how you feel about an agency and the choices that you make. I think the other thing I would say from a client side point of view is you've got to make sure that the stakeholders on your side, you've got all of the right people engaged. Because it's not just my decision to decide which agent we go for, as much as I would love that. But, you know, you've got to bring people in and make sure that they feel part of it and they feel part of the decision-making process. The people in the room, but also their bosses that will be sitting outside the room, you know, in other meetings doing other stuff, that they feel that they've got some element of control over the decision. And often when you're making quite a hard decision, and in the case we were moving from two very large, big agencies that we'd had relationships with for 10 plus years into a consolidated approach for our global business. And that's a big, you know, that you know, I hate the phrase change management, but essentially that's what we were trying to do. So you've got to bring, everybody's got to feel like they've got a voice and that they're part of the process and this isn't something that's being forced upon them. I think that's the big learning for me, is that you've got to manage with your internal stakeholders really strongly.
Okay, and
I think from the consultancy point of view, it is right at the beginning of the process, understanding who is the decision maker? Not who have you got your liaison with, but who is the decision maker, and what is it? What is it that's going to?
Because you're saying that normally there is one.
There's normally one or two, I would think.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And working out what their business objectives are and what their the reason why the brief has been put out. Identifying that is if you get that cracked early on in the process, you're sort of heading in the right direction.
Okay. Now, Charlotte, how do you make a decision on which agencies you ask to pitch? What informs that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think most, in our case, it was we looked at our incumbents and decided whether we felt that they were right to repitch or not. And sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't. You know, sometimes the relationship can be a bit burnt out or the agency's changed dramatically. And then you look around and say, okay, we know the core of what we want, so therefore we need an agency we think like this. So who do we go after? And typically on the client side, there'll be people that have worked, well, I think the best clients probably the ones that have worked agency side. So you've got a network, you know the good and bad about agencies. So you look at your own, you know, kind of view of the world. And then in our case, you know, it was me together with Tarod, who you mentioned earlier, where we came up with a list of people we think we should go to. And that's the first lot we went to. And I think it's important to have a mixture in that.
Hard for someone like you, though, because as a global business, you can't go to an independent in one geography, presumably, can you?
No, you can't. But global thinking, in our case, it wasn't about wanting agencies to execute in every market, because that is a disaster, frankly, because you're only as strong as your weakest link in that situation. For us, it was about having an agency that could help us with our kind of global brand and with our business units and product areas, and be the sort of global agency of record for those parts of the business. Okay. So that's about having global thinking. It's not about having an office in every country. So it could be that it's, you know, a more local agency.
Okay. And then on the deciding who wins, I mean, we talked briefly about it, this sort of scorecard concept.
Yeah.
So you have a range of stakeholders, and that might be 5, it might be 10, but everyone is essentially marking to some pre-agreed criteria. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it all, you sort of tot it up. And have a discussion from there, do you? Is that basically
So we had a scorecard at both RFI and RFP. So at the RFI stage, we essentially did a stack rank of all of the, I think we had 10 or 11 agencies that came back with the initial information, and we stack ranked based on that.
And literally, the ones who pitched were the top 4 or 5 or whatever it was.
It was the top 3 plus a wild card.
Okay.
Which we put through, and rightly so, because actually I never told you this. It was Zeno.
It was us.
Anyway, that's another story probably.
So we're going to have a chat later about those RFI films.
Yeah, but do you know what? You do the scorecard because you need to be able to show to everybody else involved in the process why the decision has been made to go with these agencies. The reality is, if you'd given me that list of agencies and told me which ones I would have taken to pitch, it probably would have been the 4 that we chose, regardless. Mm. You know, there's always one that you think, oh, I'm really disappointed that they didn't do better.
That's you who knew the market, but I suspect other people who had an influence around that table didn't know the agency market as well. So is that fair?
That is totally fair. Okay. Totally fair,
And you all have an equal score, or maybe you don't.
It's a total democracy from a scorecard point of view. I'm not sure what we would have done if it had come to a really, like if it had been like all agencies that I was like, oh my God, I never want to work with them.
Right.
I don't know quite what I would have done, but In actual fact, it was kind of what I wanted it to be, and what I thought it should be.
And on when let's not go into the detail of this, but when the decision made to go with Zeno, was it close? Was it really tight?
No, we smashed it out of the ballpark. Yeah.
I'd have to look back at the scorecard to see if it was close on the scorecard. There was a consensus, put it that way.
Okay.
And at some point, the scorecard, that very end decision point, the scorecard kind of goes out the window.
Because
it's like, do you know what, guys? Come on, this is why these are the best people to work with, you know, and you kind of forget who got 8 and who got 10.
Yeah, well, it's quite often at those. It's funny enough, it's quite similar with the PR Moment Awards, is it that the difference in points in that final discussion can be so close that actually you've got to, and that's why you have that group discussion.
Exactly.
But clearly, if someone comes from. Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stories of agencies being told, having pitched and not being told that they lost it.
Yeah.
They just sort of gathered. Because somebody else seemed to win it.
Yes.
Rebecca, I'm working on this. It's an oddly common practice, this, within the industry, isn't it? And it's basically just poor manners, isn't it? Simple as that.
Yeah. It is so frustrating for an agency to spend, the hours investment, the financial investment, passion, enthusiasm. You know, there is a lot that is pushed into a pitch process. And it is... it is so disheartening when sometimes totally you just never hear from them again.
I know someone who was told he won and then never heard from them
right.
again.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
And so there are, you know, a variety. Sometimes you're told that you've won in principle, but then the budget's cut. So that's like, it never goes on the bottom line.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can, there's one opportunity at the moment where we haven't heard back from them.
How long was it?
Like, this is probably like 3 weeks.
Okay, so that's not bad. I mean, I've heard worse, much worse than that.
No, completely, but I doubt we're going to hear back.
Okay, right.
And that's the thing.
And I think it's shocking. It's the most unacceptable thing ever from a client not to give feedback.
So rude.
I said to all of the agencies that weren't successful through the RFI stage and the RFP stage, I said, I'll do calls with every one of you to tell you why.
I was going to say feedback, because feedback can be difficult, can't it? Yeah. Because it can be, well, actually, we didn't really like you.
Yeah.
You know, it can be hard. So how do you... Go on.
And I was super direct with everybody because it's my style, but also because, you know, I'd been on the other side of the fence for 15 years. I knew how disheartening it was and how much effort, time, money, all of those things, and emotion, which is not to be underestimated, goes into a pitch process. And as Rebecca said right at the beginning, that's the thing I miss about not being an agency the most, is not working on new business, because it is such a buzz.
Mm,
it really
exactly.
is such a buzz. So to kind of not tell anybody why they what was good and what was bad is awful. So to
or,
me,
or not
I would
tell them at all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I would blacklist.
Well, I was going to say,
oh, absolutely.
That goes on a reasonable amount, doesn't
we
it?
We would go back. Yeah. I think one of the benefits about having a business development person is that they can be slightly independent.
Yes.
So the thing with human beings is that they don't like giving bad news to other human beings. And so they just slightly duck it.
Yeah.
You know, they tell the winning agency, or they just decide they've lost the budget and they can't really be bothered with it. Frankly, we wouldn't want to work with those people anyway. But they don't really like telling the person they've been in a room with that they didn't really like the idea. So they just sort of duck it. But having somebody that wasn't in the room, that is slightly independent, means that actually they feel a little bit more comfortable in giving bad feedback and saying that they've lost sometimes. And I feel like sometimes they'll say close second, and it takes, you've got to basically push back on that, because there is no,
everyone's
close second. Yeah, no such thing.
Yeah.
But actually, when somebody, you know, as Charlotte was saying, that she's straightforward and gives honest feedback, that's all an agency wants.
Yeah.
We don't actually mind if they say, you know, we absolutely love the ideas, but the strategy, or vice versa.
You're too expensive.
Exactly, as we made the point earlier, that it's very subjective, you know. Yeah. You can't have 100% conversion rate.
But I think there is, informally, there's a bit of a... some brands have a reputation of having a whole sort of round of pitches and never making an appointment, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of knowledge sharing within agencies that goes on.
Oh, exactly.
That I wouldn't touch them.
Yeah.
I'd like to think what goes around comes around a bit.
Exactly. And what you need to be aware of is, you know, again, going back to agencies that have got really good best practice on this, it's like, you know, we have a qualification process. You know, you know, people have hearsay, they know people who work in it. You'll have a sense of, you know, whether or not this is going to be something that goes above the line, gets across the line. But it is, you know, it does happen. It is rude. You know, I will chase them down. But, you know, then you just, move on. You know, that's the thing.
And I suppose final question, actually. How much time? Is there an average time you spend on a pitch? Is it depends on the pitch, I guess.
It is quite difficult to.
You must add it up, though, don't you, from a timesheets perspective?
We do, but I mean, some pitches, you know, there's so many variables. You know, some you can get to the strategy really quickly, and the ideas, You know, you only need one brainstorm and you're flying. Because the time scale that the clients give you is longer, you know, work fills the amount of time that you have to fill it, so therefore it takes time.
It depends how complex the brief is as well.
Very much so. And how much
clients can overcomplicate it. Yeah.
Exactly. There is an awful lot of hours that go into it. I think like a minimum amount of hourage that goes into a pitch is about 100 hours.
You reckon?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, you know,
it's
you
a
do
big
the
old commitment, isn't it?
But it shows.
Does it?
In the pitch process, it really shows who spent time and who hasn't.
Yeah.
Going back to that complexity of a brief, if 30% of what is pitched is actually activated, frankly, having a complicated brief is is not necessary, yeah. is it? Because what you're testing is the thought process.
Yeah, yeah, but I think you have to give something real, and that's what we tried to do. We said, right, this is a real thing that we know is coming, and okay, we didn't maybe give all of the sort of ins and outs from a confidentiality point of view, and but like gave a scenario that was credible that we could all relate to, and say, okay, we get how they would do this for us. I think that's the important thing.
Brilliant. Rebecca from Three Monkeys Zeno and Charlotte from Lenovo, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.